We're happy to make podcasts available for selected EdWebinars for your listening pleasure. If you'd like to receive a CE certificate, you must watch the video recording. Recordings and quizzes can be found in the EdWebinar archives. Please visit home.edweb.net/podcasts for more information.
Welcome, everyone. Good afternoon, or wherever you are in the world. My name is Keith Krueger, and joining you from Washington, D.C. We have a great program planned for you today on inclusive learning environments. So let's get started. I am Keith Krueger. I have the honor of running COSIN. We're the National Association of Heads of Technology and School Systems and their teams. We've been around for 31 years, and nearly all of those years I've had the honor of running COSIN. So I'm really looking forward to this discussion around inclusiveness with our technology. So I'd like to ask each of our panelists, and I think we'll start at the far right end of the screen with Paul Valente from Chicago, who heads up a facility automation architect. Paul, tell us a little bit about what you do and how you fit into this topic.
Sure. Thank you for the lead in, Keith. Thank you, everybody, for attending. I love to be here virtually with everybody. It's a brave new world with all this technology and web panels. I'm the facility automation architect for CPS. I've been with CPS for 23 and a half years at this point in a variety of different roles. I've been a teacher a long time ago. I have a secondary education a degree with a specialty in special ed. I've been a technology coordinator. I've been the Windows and Chromebook engineer for the district. Built and managed a managed services environment. And currently my role encompasses a couple different verticals from building automation systems, so the HVAC systems that are in commercial buildings as well as a lot of schools, managing the audiovisual contract for CPS, so all the audiovisual devices that get implemented, I manage that aspect of it, as well as intercoms and PA systems. So sort of an interesting gathering of goods and services that are in my portfolio stack. I was invited to be here, and I'm looking forward to sharing some thoughts on what we're doing within the district.
Great. Well, thanks so much, Paul. I can see that you're going to have a lot to contribute to today's conversation. So let's go to Sue Thoth from Common Sense Media, who has a real interesting background around equity. So Sue, tell us a little bit about how you come to this conversation.
Thank you so much, Keith. Thanks so much for having me today. My name is Sue Thoth, and I am working with Common Sense Education. And as said, my background is in I'm the director of outreach for Common Sense, and I have a team of folks that are across the country who do a lot of work on behalf of Common Sense, trying to help people integrate a lot of our content, which is related to helping teachers, students, educators, administrators understand the ethics, the responsibilities, the safety around media and technology. And in addition to that, a lot of what we do is we rate and review education technology tools that are used in the classroom. And so with that, we try to help people identify which tools are best, which software, what kind of classroom tools are going to be best for their own classrooms, for their needs, and for their environment. And so a lot of that has to do with the culture of your classroom. So I do a lot related to social emotional learning, a lot with digital citizenship, and really understanding how to best utilize the tools that we have available to all of us. So yes, equity is one of my passions, and I wanna make sure that all of our students have access to all of the great tools that we have available to all of us.
That's great. And our final panelist is Madeline Mortimer, and she heads up Global Education Innovation Lead at Logitech. So Madeline, tell us a little bit about your background.
Yeah, definitely. I'm so excited to be here today with all of you. So at Logitech, my role is to focus on the front-end innovation of all of our education products. And I come from a background where I studied and worked in the intersection of child development and technology. So I bring all of those knowledge and expertise to the work that we do. And we focus from the ground up, from the very first prototype to the on-the-shelf product, being age-appropriate, appropriate for different learning environments, whether it's in the classroom, on the school bus, in the student's home. And we really take pride in making sure that we have a rigorous, thorough design and product process. So really excited about going through some of those learnings and what we do at Logitech today.
That's great. So maybe if we could bring up this next slide. You know, I was really struck by this piece of research that 72% of classrooms around the world have students with identified additional learning needs. You know, sometimes we think very narrowly, maybe, who can't, has a special disability or a particular need. But this really shows that really every classroom has a need for inclusive design. So when the research was done, it defined the additional learning needs as when a student has a learning difficulty or a disability, which calls for additional learning support. So with many diverse needs, it's critical that we, as educators, think about inclusive learning environment for all students. So what do each of the panelists see as key elements, and what do you recommend that schools and school systems and school leaders consider when they're designing that inclusive learning space? And maybe we'll start back at Paul.
Thank you. Great question. There's many factors to consider. And so from my experience, I've been in the classroom setting and now I'm at the district level. And so from the lens of the district side of things, especially when we're talking with our design managers on the capital side, as they're looking to redo an entire school or a set of classrooms at particular locations, we have to take into account, obviously, the physical size constraints and what can actually be done. And then as well as what needs to be done from a modification standpoint to meet ADA requirements for those particular spaces. I mean, that's all the physical space kind of thing. But we try to look to standardize as much as we can while still providing the flexibility to the instructor to meet the needs for IEPs and all the additional technology that would be needed in the classroom space. So, and as you can imagine, that's very challenging for a large district to meet all of those needs in a plan. So we try to look to see with furniture and with various other design choices how we can create it to be a sort of a modular space, maybe furniture that's height adjustable. We've recently pivoted for interactive televisions from a design standpoint to make sure that they had height adjustable stands for either wall mounted or mobile mounted. So that way you can meet ADA requirements for K-3 all the way up to high schoolers. So it's just one of those things to keep in mind looking at that. We also try to identify technology champions that are going to be within the spaces and then do a train-the-trainer style model with them. So especially when we're looking at designing spaces or implementing new technology into inclusive spaces and whatnot, we always find it to be more successful once you have these technology champions or these school champions that really are interested in the technology. They become the subject matter experts, and then they in turn train and help and assist the others within the school environment. And that also brings out a lot of collaboration options, with folks, because there's things that we look at from a design perspective at district level that the folks on the ground have a different vantage point. And so we want to try to make sure that we can meet in a happy medium to be able to make sure everybody is covered. We can do the best we can with the limited resources that we have for our district.
Remind me how many students there are in Chicago public schools and how many schools?
Oh, geez, there's a lot. I think it was 320,000 students was the last count. We were the third largest. We got demoted to the fourth, but still pretty large. School-wise, including charters, I think we're about 625 schools. Wow. So about 65, 68 million square feet, depending on how you're counting. 55,000 classrooms or 55,000 rooms, I think, throughout the district. So it's an interesting challenge. Yeah.
Kind of breathtaking in terms of the numbers that you're dealing with. So Sue, tell us how you think about this question.
Well, I love Paul's answer, and I love having his perspective here because I think a lot about, as he mentioned, the physical spaces, right? And all of the needs that we have when it comes to furniture and the kinds of physical tools and hardware that we have in each of these systems. I come from it from, you know, more of the design, how does this classroom feel, right? How do you make this an inclusive space? Like, you can have all that tech, but if your students don't feel comfortable using that tech, or if they don't feel like they can be themselves in that space, you know, then you're not necessarily meeting the needs of your student. So we're talking about a diverse range of, you know, physical disabilities and intellectual disabilities and, you know, and learning and attention issues. And, you know, you mentioned 72% of students with identified needs. I'm sure we have plenty of other, you know, unidentified needs going on in our classrooms, or just different ways that kids like to learn. And so when it comes to inclusive spaces, how do we make sure that we are creating spaces within our classrooms in which our students feel comfortable and which they can, you know, maybe have a quiet space over here, or have these flexible learning environments in which they can just, you know, relax when it's okay to relax, right? You know, how can they focus when it's time for direct instruction? So, you know, how do we create these spaces in which our teachers, you know, have the best ability to be able to instruct the students, and the students have the ability to learn whenever they're into these spaces? And it also comes from the ways that we instruct, right? It isn't just about, you know, that physical space, but it's about the ways that we can create, we can use universal design for learning principles in which we have, you know, different ways of giving that information and expressing that information. You know, if you're familiar with universal design for learning, thank you so much, Olivia, for throwing that into the chat. If that's something that's new to you, no matter what your physical space looks like, you know, in your classroom, you can use some of these principles to make sure that you are reaching your students and they are best able to meet the needs, you know, of their expression of how they learn. And so, you know, when it comes to also using the tools, one of the things that we try to do at Common Sense that I just wanted to mention is we try to highlight different tools that we think they're not necessarily designed specifically for kids with different kinds of learning needs. They are designed generally for all kids. And so, you know, when they have the best kind of supports, for example, you know, I think about Microsoft has a tool called Flip, where students, you know, Catherine here is asking about online learning, right? And so we mentioned, you know, I mentioned this tool called Flip, where students are able to have that individual expression by recording videos for themselves. And there's all kinds of way and different kinds of supports that our students with variable learning needs are able to express themselves through video, perhaps in a way that, you know, maybe students wouldn't be able to write out, you know, their report, or that, you know, there are different ways that they can use the tools to be able to, when they're uncomfortable, when they cannot accomplish the task in the traditional way, right? So, so there's all different ways that we can make our classrooms more inclusive.
Great answer, Sue. And I want to come back to that question about virtual learning, but let's hear what Maddie has to say about from your perspective at Logitech.
Yeah, most definitely. And much of what both Paul and Sue mentioned definitely resonates with how we approach these environments. And we really try and look at the fundamentals and the foundations of a classroom. So starting with be and be seen. So this refers to, you know, mostly the material being seen. And we partnered with EdWeek and we did a survey with over 1,000 participants. And we had some really interesting data that came up. And one of them is, you know, 42% of teachers reported students in the classroom have trouble seeing images and other material from the other side of the classroom. And so, you know, we believe it shouldn't matter where you are seated in the classroom. And, you know, this also relates to if students are dialing in from different places as well. And so we look at creating solutions for that with, you know, whiteboard cameras, content cameras, video conferencing that can really help build more of an equitable environment from that standpoint. Our second main area is hear and be heard. So referring to students' ability to hear what's being said, whether it's from their peers, educator, and being heard themselves as well. And from the same research study, we found 40% of students say classroom noise is so great they can't understand what their teacher says. And so, you know, this is really important that this foundational need is addressed. And this can be addressed from, you know, different audio solutions, such as microphones. And finally is interaction and expression. And so we really look at each student has the ability to express their mastery of the knowledge in a way that's pertinent to them. And, you know, research shows students are 3.4 times more likely to engage when they are interacting with their teacher and peers. And so having that collaborative, interactive experience is so important to, you know, that sense of belonging, boosting that engagement. And so tools such as Astidus, which can really help with those. So to summarize, we look at three foundational pillars ranging from, you know, visuals, audio, and interaction.
That's great. Well, thank you for that framework. That's very helpful. Let's go on to the next question, which is really how we evaluate EdTech, how did each of you, the panelists, think about this prism around supporting an inclusive environment? And why don't we start back again with Paul?
Great question. So the variety of factors, again, looking at it from a district lens, we try to partner deeply with our educational teams when we're coming up with our design models for our environments. Much to the same thing that Madeline was talking about earlier with the different ways of thinking about, you know, see and be seen, hear and be heard in interaction and knowledge. What we see also is that the students that are here are very technologically focused. They might not have the means to be able to afford technology at home, but they're very aware of technology and technology's impact within daily life. And so we take that into account as well when we're designing or recommending technology pieces. One key thing was like Chromebooks, for instance. We found that when we were implementing regular Chromebooks, clamshell style, without a touchscreen, students destroyed them far quicker than the ones that had a higher perceived value, which would be the touchscreen Chromebooks or the ones that had a stylus. And the inclusion of that technology gives it a higher perceived value, even though the dollar monetary value was not much different, for the actual valuation of the device. But it's that sort of perception of value of that technology. So you got to take that into account when looking at technology initiatives. From a inclusive environment standpoint, it gets a little bit interesting from our vantage point, because you need to obviously balance your budget with what you can actually afford, but also make sure that the devices and recommendations that you have are not too grand for the particular space. So, you know, keeping that in what the focus is for that particular space or the set of spaces that you're going to be designing or implementing technology for, make sure that you're in alignment with the core needs of that space, and then working with the stakeholders that are there to take into account the additional things that they might want to bring in. You know, maybe it's you're designing for technology, but they might need additional furniture to be able to move the space around, to be able to have a quiet area in the back, and to do other things of that nature. So it's looking at all that. Durability is another big thing. Folks don't necessarily look at the durability of the particular equipment. So if you're like laptops, desktops, tablets, things like that, are you measuring like drop tests of them? You know, are you putting it in a book bag and dropping the book bag on the ground to simulate what a student would typically do with the device if they were taking that home? You know, how you clean the device, you know, making sure that all of that, you know, is done in a safe manner that wouldn't harm the device or the student. You know, things like that, looking at the material selection. So if there's like a fabric on the device, can that fabric be cleaned in such a way or not pick up stains, you know, from whatever the application is? So we were evaluating a camera for potential culinary purposes to replace or augment the overhead mirrors that would be done in a culinary classroom setting. So that way additional students can see it from the back of the class instead of having to look at the angled mirrors that are above, and have a video stream for that. So, but the camera we were evaluating had some fabric on it, and we wanted to make sure that it was coated in such a way where it wouldn't pick up any of the cooking material or whatnot from the presenter. So it's just sort of like looking all that. And the final bit I would recommend everybody think about, you know, from a sustainability standpoint, is the packaging. We don't think much about packaging of any of our devices. Usually you're tearing something open, you're implementing it, and you're throwing stuff away. But, you know, looking at, we look at vendors' packaging as a way of evaluating them, because we want to find things that are sustainable, you know, packed in paper or cardboard or of something like that is fully recyclable and not bringing in like styrofoam or plastics as best we can for it. So that's a big deal for us.
Interesting, Paul. You know, you mentioned both kind of cleaning devices and this new trend around sustainability. I'm wondering, you know, since the pandemic, what are the big changes that you've seen in Chicago?
Well, it's been obviously a huge focus on, you know, what chemicals can you use from a, you know, from a cleaning standpoint on whatever devices. And then that prompted a whole lot of questioning to our vendors of, can we use these chemicals by these cleaning vendors that we have within our district? And will they harm or degrade the surface or the functionality of said device? And then what is the cleaning procedures for that? So, and then that in turn then goes into being something that you educate the occupants of the spaces who are using the devices in those spaces on this is the frequency in which you need to do the cleaning and so on and so forth, especially around touch devices and surfaces, tabletops, interactive televisions, devices that have like touch screen or pen input. I mean, I used to be a teacher, and you know, I would typically get whatever illness the kids would get every single year. I was on the chopping block to get that. And so, you know, they're sneezing, drooling in some cases, or there's like all sorts of disgusting, horrible stuff that's happening, and you're constantly running around with like wet wipes trying to clean everything. You know, the same thing goes with technology. It's like, what does that procedure look like? Can you spray it? Do you have to use a microfiber towel, you know, things like that. It's just, you really want to look at that from that vantage point, because while something might be like really cool and really shiny and like really neat and everything, you might not be able to clean it with the cleansers that you currently have that are approved for use within your space. So,
Right. So Maddie, you have a background in research. How would you, what do you think about this question?
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, at Logitech throughout the entire design process, as I mentioned before, we work with thousands of educators, students, ergonomics specialists, and also specialists around adaptive needs as well. And, you know, throughout that process, we have so many different learnings from the research we've done. And here are a few checklist items we think can be helpful when evaluating the learning environment that you have. So firstly, is it designed for learners and educators with learners and educators? So there's many products out there that, you know, companies just sell into education, but were perhaps originally built for an adult working in an office. And so, you know, that obviously isn't appropriate for sustained focus, learning, minimizing distractions and all of that. Secondly, is it designed for comfort and intuitive use? So again, you know, not having a product that's not designed for students and age appropriate can become uncomfortable very quickly. And we've seen through research that we've conducted the vast difference in focus levels between those different products designed for students in mind versus those who are not. Is it built around learners' behaviors in spite of them? And so, you know, we look at how students will naturally want to fidget, touch, play with whatever is in the area of their device. And so looking for products that have that in mind. Is it universally adaptable where possible? So having products that can be modular in nature, for example, one of our education headsets, Zone Learn, is modular in the fact that you can change out the ear pads to be over the ear, on the ear. You can change the different cables for different devices, so it can be appropriate in that way. And does it hold up to the school environment and protect the environment at large? And so, you know, again, is it durable enough? Has it undergone testing, drop testing, drool testing, as we do on our styluses as well?
That's great. You know, really helpful checklist. You know, when looking at a framework to evaluate technology, you know, I think it's very helpful to think about the physical, cognitive, and social and emotional needs. Can you share an example of how a tech-enabled environment may not be meeting one of these needs?
I mean, earlier I mentioned how you can have this very tech-rich classrooms, and students may not necessarily feel comfortable using that technology because of maybe some of the stigma surrounding their disability, surrounding some of that support. And so, you know, one of the things that I was talking to my one of my colleagues who's a former special ed teacher about this, and she mentioned that at the beginning of the school year, she sets up so much expectation and ground rules and really creates that inclusive environment right from the get-go. She has all of her students in the classroom, you know, understand the availability of all the tools. She demonstrates all the tools, and there are no restrictions about who can use these tools. It's not designated for this particular student because they have this specific need. These tools that are built into a lot of the technology that they have in the classroom are for everybody, and anybody is able to self-advocate for, you know, for when these tools do not meet their needs. They are very much encouraged to try to find, you know, alternative solutions for, you know, for some of the ways in which they are, you know, they need to learn. And so, you know, in that way, I just loved her advice around really setting up those expectations and the culture in the classroom. And so, you know, the counterpart to that, when you ask for like, oh, you know, the bad example is she's seen a lot of teachers who are very excited about screen readers, and they love them when test taking time comes in, or, you know, they love them, you know, in order to be able to help their students do better on some of these standardized tests. And so they'll introduce them 2 weeks before, get everybody ready, right? So these students are not practiced, they're not well versed, they're, you know, there's a time crunch on adapting to some of these tools, you know, and for the sake of using them, you know, in a less empowered way. Her students are able to use them all year long and without this stigma. And kind of addressing Catherine's question, I'm going to slip this in here because, you know, she mentioned that she's in an online learning environment. And one of the things that I want to address is, you know, when you set up expectations in your classroom around the use of education technology, that is digital culture. That is what we call digital citizenship, is, you know, understanding the social emotional needs of your kids. These devices, They're tools, but what you need is for your students to be able to do things like self-reflect, evaluate their feelings, understand, you know, the social relationships that they have and the ways in which these tools, you know, both the educational tools that we use in the classroom and these, you know, these fancy pants, you know, telephones that they have in their pockets, these, you know, computers they have in their pockets are affecting their relationships, their well-being, their sleep, you know, their habits, their health. And so, you know, that is a big part of this culture of not just their educational tools, but also, you know, the social technology. That's a huge part of their life. And so setting up that classroom at the beginning so that your students understand, you know, what the expectations are, as well as kind of like, not just because I said so kind of ways, like, you know, these are the teacher rules, but because I want your students to really be reflective about the ways that this technology both, you know, hinders their lives in some ways, as well as can really enhance and help them. And your students are smart. They're able to, you know, to be reflective about this if you give them the time and the structure and they understand what's good for them. So, you know, so that's what we do at Common Sense. I'll put a couple of tools in the chat to kind of share some of those expectations and some of the social emotional aspect of using technology.
That's really helpful, Sue, to give both a, you know, an example of doing it well and maybe doing it a little more problematically. I want to dive in a little deeper on that question by Catherine Ortiz about being an online teacher. And I'm wondering if any of the panelists have seen where school systems have set an expectation for parents of what the setup should look like, or is that just not done?
I can speak from a little bit from our perspective. I don't have as much to really share on this other than from talking with some of my educational colleagues in our offices. And it's been a mixed bag with that, because partly it's sort of the buy-in from the students' parents that what they're doing is valuable. And what I mean by that is we've seen, and it's more just conjecture from conversations about conversations they've had with schools that they're working with, that some of the parents just feel that the technology is a toy. And, you know, you can just play with it. And it's not there to be a tool for learning, to do learning. You have to be in school with a book in front of it, and the class must be silent and engaged and, you know, listening to the, you know, whatever that the teacher is doing. It's sort of like the old school methodology for teaching. And it's one of those things where, you know, to spark inclusion, you need to have conversation, you need to have engagement. You need to have buy-in that this is the way we're going to do it. And not everybody is going to buy in, and you're not going to be successful with that at 100%, but you can get close. So I think that there's room for that, but it's making sure that message not only resonates with the student, but also resonates with the parents or the guardians, whoever is supervising. And then on top of it, it's looking at the challenge we have is looking at where the students can have the space to be able to have that place at home if they're doing the remote learning, you know, so that way it's their own space, their own bubble. I think what a lot of folks have seen who've done hybrid or remote work from home or teaching from home or whatnot, or from some other space that's not their typical office or classroom, is that you need to conscientiously craft out the area that you're gonna have that. Whether it's, you know, because if you're always, let's say, teaching or working from home in the living room on your sofa, then when you're done working, you're still on that sofa watching TV. Like it's this sort of like mental kind of thing. Like to have a dedicated space that you can go to if you can swing that. Not everybody's able to have that, but. And trying to have it as personable as possible and as quiet as possible. And I think through like headphone technology, like Maddie was talking about, having headphones sometimes, maybe that creates sort of that quiet space that you can focus, or you can listen to music if that's more your learning style. But it's a big, it depends, you know, with things, but it's, we're coming a long way.
I suspect that some of the fully virtual schools have set expectations. My recollection was, you know, like a Florida virtual school, in order to be part of that, you had to have a certain type of setup. Now, in that instance, they actually shipped equipment to the students, I believe. But, you know, we also learned at COSIN during the pandemic that a lot of our assumptions about remote learning were not correct. Particularly many school districts purchased the cheapest device that was not capable of doing virtual learning. And so typically we, you know, the original question was, do you have a connection? Do you have a device? But it really mattered what kind of device you had that in fact could do what we're doing today with virtual learning. And the setup within a home made a great deal of difference. The connectivity, the Federal Communications Commission's assumptions around what a highly connected home would be were not true when you had two parents or more and several kids all trying to connect at the same time. So anyway, let's go back to the next question, which when looking, what does the latest research say about EdTech impacts on the student learning environment? So let's go to Maddie for that one.
Yeah, definitely. So we've seen in, again, the research that we recently did with EdWeek, 74% of educators say students' level of physical comfort while using educational technology impacts their level of engagement in learning. And in this case, physical comfort refers to, their usage with the hardware. So whether it's with the device they're using, the headset they have, using a trackpad instead of a mouse, using their finger instead of a stylus. And educators are seeing that, when students aren't comfortable with all of this tech from a physical standpoint, maybe they're getting pain in their back from hunching over, pain in their wrists, that has a direct impact on, their engagement levels, whether that refers to sustained focus, engagement within the class as a whole, which is really fascinating, especially in the past years where there's been an increase in one-to-one device usage and that being the main mode of learning, thinking about how we can add tools to make that experience more physically comfortable and in turn improve focus and engagement. And related to this is another really interesting stat that came out of this piece of research, which is 28% of secondary school teachers say their students experience neck, back, and or wrist pain or fatigue while using EdTech, again, referring to hardware. So that's nearly a third of students making, verbal complaints or at least showing physical signs of discomfort in that case. And so I'll be interested, in our Q&A at the end, if anyone has seen this themselves in the classroom. But again, this is really a topic that has flown under the radar. It hasn't been spoken about that much. We talk about screen time and, more of the on-screen elements of the increase in devices. But there hasn't been much discussion about the physical effects. And, this research really shows how it trickles down into the learning process and focus levels just as much as the on-screen aspects of the increase of tech usage in the classroom.
Fascinating about that, the ergonomics around that all. So, Sue, how are you thinking about this at Common Sense?
We do research every year. We do a couple of big research projects, and one that we conducted last year was rather than self-reported data about students and their technology use, we embedded ourselves with parental permission and with student consent. We embedded ourselves within some phones of a couple hundred students to find out One of the things that I thought was particularly surprising was, you know, in this study, it was called Constant Companion, and it was named such because our students have this, you know, as I mentioned, the cell phone with them all the time. And with education technology in the classroom, students, you know, there are some cell phone bans, obviously, you know, in a lot of your school districts and in a lot of your classrooms and in schools, but students feel like they have to have their phones on them all the time, whether it's permissible or not, right? Some schools are a little less effective when it comes to, you know, if they have a ban in some way. And so these students, you know, by looking at their phones and by being with them, we found that, you know, they're receiving, you know, a median of 237 notifications per day. And during that school period, 97% of the participants were getting notifications on their phone, at least one, right? So we know that during the school day, the presence of these phones impacts their ability to learn. And so, you know, of course, the benefits of education technology, including all these great accessibility features, are fantastic. But a lot of teachers, you know, they don't always rely upon the school issued devices, because they're, you know, these lessons, these ed tech lessons are so important that, you know, the school phone or the personal phones are sometimes the backup when, you know, when school devices fail them. And so because of this presence, teachers have to contend with devices and the classroom management that goes along with that. And so, you know, we have all, even with your devices, even with school issued devices, with blocking, you know, with trying to keep kids on task, kids are very determined and they're very savvy and they love to get around whatever it is that you are putting in there. So with all of this education technology in the learning environment, you know, one of the teachers have to, they have to make that use of technology meaningful, meaning, you know, when students are using devices, they're not doing it for terrible things. They're not doing it for boring. They're doing it for things like collaboration with each other, right? They're doing it for a meaningful reason. They're doing it to create something, right? So something that they can't necessarily do, you know, without the support of this technology and real world applications and real world gathering of information and sharing, like these are all important. So making it meaningful is essential, addressing those digital distractions, you know, in your policies and making those actually functional in some way. We have some advice on that. And then of course, having time in your classroom that's very clear about when you use technology and when you're not using technology, and having that balance of face-to-face instruction with, you know, with some sort of, you know, creativity, journaling, like offline activities where students can be away from their tech a little bit, I think also really helps with some of that fear of missing out on your devices. So I will post a couple of other resources in the chat as well about all the digital citizenship resources and lessons that we have.
That's great. Well, I want to get to some of the audience questions, but let's kind of quickly think about where we've seen technology benefit students with diverse learners, the learning needs. You know, is there leading to like less frustration or enhanced collaboration or deeper management? And Sue, you were on a roll there, so why don't you continue?
When it comes to, you know, our students with learning needs, a couple of the places that I just wanted to highlight that I've seen great success is in esports. I'm a huge esports fan, and with our students who, you know, a lot of times with physical disabilities or, you know, with attention issues, esports is a place of belonging. And, you know, even social media use, where your students can take on another identity, where they can choose who they want to be in some of these spaces, it gives them, you know, some freedom. It gives them an ability to recreate themselves outside of what people see every single day. So I wanted to highlight that, but I also wanted to highlight, we have a lot of students that also just are not chatterboxes like all of us here on this panel, who are not necessarily, you know, prone to raising their hand and shouting their great ideas in class. Even simple things like collaboration tools that you can use in a classroom that allow all students to give voice to their ideas, you know, in ways that they are comfortable, in ways that they might be anonymous, you know, tools like Padlet or Nearpod or any of these collaboration tools are just so helpful in everybody's classroom to be able to give voice to all students.
Very helpful. Paul, what do you see in Chicago?
Well, I mean, I want to echo a lot of what Sue was mentioning, because it's really, I mean, to meet the needs of our diverse learners, we have to be diverse in our offerings of things that we provide. So, I mean, that's sort of the fundamental, but it's really tough to do that. I mean, if you're looking for individual development plans for every single student, maybe you have 35 kids in a class, and then you're trying to create these development roadmaps for the particular curriculum that you're implementing, and you only have a 45-minute period. I mean, that's an arduous task. What can you do to meet those development needs with the tools that you have at hand, and then trying to diversify the offering? There's many different ways. I think a lot of it too is understanding the community of your students and like what works with that group of students. So when I was a teacher, one of the things that we did, and I was math and computer science in a high school setting. So not the most thrilling class for any of my kids to go to, but we had a video game morning breakfast. So while kids were eating breakfast, we would play video games. This is long before esports really became a thing. We had an arcade, like a little video game system set up there on my computer, and the kids would play. And it was just, they wanted to do something other than sit in the cafeteria and eat breakfast, then come in and play video games. But you know what we did with that too is had a tie-in where they had to be caught up with their lessons and their homework and the various other things that were assigned to them. They didn't have to be perfect. They didn't have to be straight A students. They just had to be caught up, and then not having anything missing, and not having any kind of disciplinary issues. Otherwise, then they wouldn't be able to do that. They'd still be able to eat breakfast. They just wouldn't be able to play video games. And we found that simple thing really got a lot of the kids who just did not want to do much, and like, hey, I want to play video games in the morning while I eat my breakfast. Maybe I'll do some classwork. But there's all sorts of different ways to look at different incentives, and teachers are incredibly creative people.
So. That's great. So, Maddie, what do you see around benefits?
Yeah, I'd say it goes back to the three pillars that I discussed earlier on. Be seen, be heard, and interaction and expression. And we've seen through a lot of our research where every time we're developing a new product, we always include students with diverse learning needs within our research and product development process. And through the research that we've done, we've seen that if those three pillars are really taken care of and making sure the appropriate hardware is in place, it can really help create more of an equitable learning environment. And secondly, having products that have been tested with students with diverse learning needs in mind, both also from a physical standpoint as well. For example, with our Zone Learn headset, we did testing on students who have hearing aids, reading glasses. And so having tech that has focused on that, also we've seen it helps having products that aren't different for students with diverse learning needs, and just having products in the classroom that have been tested with those students in mind, so that these students aren't singled out with a specific product, but can use the same product as all of the students in the classroom.
Great. I see a lively debate and conversation going on in the chat, which is great. Please do that. And we'll get to some of those questions. But let's think about, next steps. Paul, what do you think attendees should take away today, and what should they do tomorrow?
Well, I've seen some of the lively conversation as well too in the chat, and I'd like to add that having outreach to the parents and or guardians of the students is going to be vital, because a lot of what the students model is what's modeled at home. So like tech addiction, or cell phone addiction, that whole I'm glued to my device kind of thing. I'm guilty of it as well, just constantly having my device with me. I mean, that's modeled by what students are seeing in life. So it's having those conversations to with the people that are important to them, that they need to figure out other ways, that you can't just be glued to a device all the time. But I'd say from an enterprise standpoint or from a district standpoint, trying to be consistent, think about your, if you're looking at large scale deployments, look at what your services providers are going to be providing. So if you're having the school personnel unbox, set up and do everything, or are you hiring a third party contractor or somebody else to come in and do that? Like I mentioned before, packaging is, from an ecological standpoint, I really, you know, encourage people to think about that, save the planet a bit. Look at the entire life cycle of the device. As I mentioned prior, keeping track of, you know, like cleaning and how the maintenance of the actual device, how the usage of the device is, or whatever technology you're implementing is done. More often people just buy something because they want to buy it. And then they want to implement it in a particular space. They don't think about it from beginning to end of life of that that device. And then, I mean, finally, basically, you can't just impose from, like, if you're a principal or a district admin, you can't just impose a piece of technology and assume that everybody's going to be compliant and love it and implement it and everything. You really got to cohort that, find change champions, technology champions, whatever you're going to call that are going to adopt this to build that culture of inclusion of the device with the students and the occupants. Do that because you really need to have that buy-in. Otherwise, it's just fancy wall art or something that looks shiny that sits in a corner and doesn't get used. So,
Sue, any actions that you recommend?
I find the tools that work for your kids. Right. You know, be thoughtful from your kids' perspectives about the ways in which we can use this technology. You know, it was mentioned by one of our attendees to make them feel independent, to make them enhance their connections with other people. Right. That's what we're using this technology for, is to give our students, you know, an ability to have good relationships and to be able to learn better and to be able to understand things in ways that suit them, right? It isn't just about the ways in which we like to teach. It's about the ways that they like to and need to learn. And so how do we find that good tech? How do we create that culture in our spaces that allow them to really be themselves and see themselves? I mean, that's a huge thing to me, is allowing them to see themselves in this content and be able to share their thoughts, their ideas, their opinions in a way that best suits them.
Great. We do have a question from the audience. Keratu asked, are there any technological devices that you use as a teacher for students with visual impairment, especially those who cannot be able to see near objects? Anything that comes to mind for that problem?
Depends on what your price point is, I guess, from my standpoint. There's all sorts of different things. You can go real cost ineffective or real cost effective of, you know, magnification panels that you can lay over things. Mm-hmm. We've seen like secondary displays, like the external displays that you would connect to like a laptop or something to get a second screen, so that way you can have larger magnification on that. There's a lot. I mean, all sorts of different things, from magnification, and then also if you need to be able to see farther away. And this would all be something that I would defer a bit more to like Madeline and Sue and see what their thoughts are on that. But there's quite a bit.
Madeline, anything come to mind for you?
Yeah, I'd say through our research, there are two solutions that we came up with for students with visual impairment. One is our whiteboard camera, Scribe. And so this focuses on enabling students who are further back in the classroom to be able to clearly see what's on the whiteboard. And then we have our desktop camera called Reach. And it's similar to a document camera, but it enables students to see objects as well. And so, you know, maybe a solution is using a product like Reach to be able to look at objects and then project it onto another screen.
Great. I want to give each of the panelists a chance to give kind of like one thing that you'd like to leave with the audience. What should they do now that they've heard all of this great advice? What's the one most important thing to remember? And I'll start with you, Sue.
All right. This is what I advocate all day long. No matter what kind of classroom you're in, we have students who are using technology, whether you like it or not. And so when it comes to inclusion, helping our students understand the world that they live in, their relationship to their community, the impact on themselves, their friends and family, and the greater community that they live in is a huge, it's a skill. It's a skill that all of our students need. So both our students, with identified, disabilities or learning issues, and, all of our students in our classrooms, they all need what we call digital citizenship skills, right? To have a healthy relationship with technology, to understand how to utilize it in the best way possible. And so when it comes to these inclusive environments, how are we teaching our students to care for themselves and for their community in a way in which we see technology as another tool, as an opportunity, and try to use it to get past some of the barriers that we are putting up for our students as a society. So yes, teach digital citizenship. That's my big thing.
Great, Paul.
Hard one, because I have a lot of things that I think to hear. But for the final point is, I guess think about from an inclusion standpoint of equity and a lens of equity, that not everybody is going to be able to have the resources available in their home setting to be able to afford certain types of technology where other students might. So if technology is going to be going home, we're going to be going elsewhere. So in our case, we have housing insecure students who don't want to take technology home because that the areas where they call home or temporary rest, it could be stolen from them. It could be damaged. It could be a target for things. So you got to look at it from the lens of equity of what you're implementing, what you're promoting. To make sure that everybody has that chance to learn and everybody deserves to have a chance to learn. So that's
great. My point. Maddie, how about you?
Yeah, I'd say incorporating student voice into all of this as well. We've had the best learnings for our products from listening to thousands of students and what did they want to see in our products. And we've been really, discipline with incorporating that all the way to crop charms that can be implemented into our Zone Learn headset, for example. But going through, for example, the three pillars that I mentioned at the start, asking students themselves, are they able to see, hear, and interact and express themselves in a way that's meaningful and effective for them? That can be one of the most powerful ways to really having inclusive, equitable learning environments is hearing from students directly themselves.
And one tip that I would give from COSIN is we do, this is really all about how we think about innovation. And so we do an annual research survey, a study called Driving K-12 Innovation. And we just last week put out the 2024 report. We'll put in the chat, the link for that. I would encourage every educator on the call to read that and think about, what are the hurdles that we're trying to overcome? In other words, why? Secondly, what are the accelerators in the world? It's because we want to swim with the way that the world is going. We don't want to swim against it. And finally, look at the technology. Too often, my audience of heads of technology start with the technology. And what we really want to start is, what are we trying to solve? So we want to thank you all for being part of today's conversation. This has been recorded. And let's give a virtual round of applause to all of our great panelists. And thanks to Logitech for making this possible. Have a great day. Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this EdWeb podcast. If you would like to receive a CE certificate, you must watch the video recording. Recordings and quizzes can be found in the EdWebinar archives. Please visit home.edweb.net/podcasts for more information.